It's time for Twig this weekend. Google Jeff has the day off. Gina Trapani's here along with Mike Elgin. And the big story breaks. Apple buys Beats. Our analysis. Plus, what's going on at TrueCrypt.org and a whole lot more. We'll even drive some driverless cars. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 251, recorded May 28th, 2014. You forgot about Dre. This Week in Google is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover's the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, it's honest, and it's easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter the promo code TWIG5. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to PersonalCapital.com/TWIG. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that covers Google, the cloud, the Googleverse. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Jarvis is in an aeroplane. Otherwise, he would be here, but filling in for him quite ably. Our news director, Mr. Mike Elgin, host of Tech News Today, every Monday through Friday on the network. It's good to see you. And
thank you.
Rabid Google Pluser.
Yep. You can just call me Jeff Jarvis, and I'll try to support the Chromebook Pixel and rip Verizon.
You like Chromebooks?
I love Chromebook Pixels.
But you're using Pixels. A Mac?
I'm using a Mac. I was on the fence. I needed, after trying a Chromebook Pixel for a month, I went on the Chromebook Pixel diet.
Right.
I just couldn't give up that high-quality screen. So I was between a MacBook Pro Retina and Chromebook Pixel. Went with the Retina. And now I regret
it. It's a tough one. Yeah. You regret it?
Kind of. I long for the simplicity and assurance of knowing everything's in the cloud.
Mike has 3.3 million followers on Google+.
Wow.
Yeah.
Popular man.
Wow is right.
A little point about that that's kind of interesting, because there's been controversy about whether Google+ is waning, whether they're going to kill it, all that kind of stuff. I sort of measure the rate of getting new users as a metric for incoming new users for the service itself. Because
right.
I'm on the suggested user list, right? And it hasn't changed a bit. It's the same
number
rate
you get every week.
I get 2,000 additional followers, circle friends, or whatever you want to call them, a day, and that's been consistent, you know, give or take a couple hundred, for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And in recent days, it hasn't changed at all.
So wow.
Still getting new users. And those are people, not accidental users. Those people who are signing up to follow people.
That's the key, because somebody's not going to circle you unless they're actually actively going to try to use Google+.
So you have to take action as a knowing user to do that.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Wow. Also here, you heard her, Gina Trapani from smarterware.org. She's, of course, at thinkup.com. They're in the offices right now, and we will talk the Google, if you don't mind, starting off with, there's a couple of interesting stories, but it's really interesting. Everywhere on Google+, you saw pictures of the self-driving car, the new one without the steering wheels or brakes, where you sit in the back seat and there's no driver in the front. And I thought, you know, I'm seeing this a lot on Google+. Let me just check. I wasn't on Facebook at all for me. So it's something Google folks are very interested in. Everybody reshared it. Kara Swisher got a ride in the car, and there's a video, promotional video that Google has put out as well.
Did you see anything on Twitter for you, Leo? I saw a few of my friends on Twitter talking about it. They were actually referring to the car. There was one of my friends made up a little symbol for it. It was like, you know, a zero, underscore, 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 zero. And, you know, uniformly on Twitter, people were making fun of the design. And uniformly on Google+, everyone was just like,
want.
So it's so interesting to see how different communities respond, particularly to Google. I think particularly Google is and their sort of Google X products are very polarizing, I find.
I think it's almost too soon. Because the first reaction I have, first of all, it's Kara called it a clown car. It's a tiny little two-seater. And the first reaction I had is, that looks just dangerous.
Yep.
I think the idea of an actual human sitting there with his hands near the wheels, I can handle. But you're sitting in the back seat. This is straight out of the TV show Silicon Valley. You have no control and no override.
Well, this particular prototype has no controls. The real prototypes, which are coming, they're going to build about 100 of them, will have controls. They'll have brakes.
This is just a demo vehicle.
I think that's probably more complex to have dual controls. And they'll have a bunch of safety features. For example, they limit the speed to 25 miles an hour.
Yeah, it looks like they were just driving in the parking lot pretty much.
Yeah, they were in the parking lot. Yeah. I found the video kind of fluffy, I'll be honest. You know, they're in a parking lot driving around 25 miles per hour. They had like a young kid and an older couple and, you know, someone sight impaired, vision impaired. And it just, it felt like, I mean, it was certainly a marketing video, but there was no explanation about, you know, my question was like, oh, so no one can hit the brake or who's programming where they're going. There was no interaction with the car.
It's autonomous. There's nobody at the controls at all.
But to Gina's point, there isn't even an obvious mechanism for people to say where they want to go. There's a single button which starts it and stops it. And that's it. So it's like, okay, go.
Now, I've ridden in autonomous vehicles at CES. Chevy had some urban, urban assault vehicles, but they were designed for crowded urban areas. They were same thing, kind of a pod. It was a one person, or maybe it was a two. Yeah, I guess it was a two person pod. You had no control. The hood came down over you. And the idea was they could daisy chain them. One could follow another and you'd say, go to school and so forth. And that didn't scare me because we were in a parking lot. This, I don't know, there's something about 25 miles an hour is not, you know, if you get in a wreck with a tree at 25 miles an hour, it's not safe.
Well, in the defense of the car, what they're actually trying to do here is accelerate the development of self-driving cars.
Right.
So right now, if you put this electronics, these radar and lasers and stuff, that circular thing on top of a LiDAR, Lexus.
LiDAR.
Right? So you're kind of, it's a halfway point. With a car like this, a purpose-built car, you can have sensors built into the sides. You can have the front of it is very snub-nosed, like the front of it just goes down immediately. That actually has a safety benefit and a navigation benefit because you can the sensors can see right down on the road. So they're trying to sort of step ahead of where self-driving cars are going to be so that they can accelerate the development of it. So that's a laudable goal. They shouldn't be raising expectations that these things are going to be on the road in a couple of years. But I think part of the goal here is to sell this to lawmakers and to the voting public.
Well, like I said, all I got was queasy. And by the way, here it wasn't Kara. Kara was a ride-along. It was Liz Gaines who called it a clown car.
Yeah. She's messing up the metaphor, though. Clown car is a car where
lots of people
get
in
exactly.
A small car.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the opposite of a clown car.
Yeah. It's a cute car. But this makes me think of when they inevitably have a recall. All the cars are just going to autonomously go in en masse back to the mothership.
Somebody in the chat room said, of course you don't tell it where to go. Google already knows where you want to go. They just find the Google Now card and steer the car that way.
Unless you just tell your phone, like Google will drive me to work.
Yeah, they know. It knows.
See you a couple minutes.
Okay, thanks.
It makes me queasy.
It's kind of an obvious idea at the same time. Like
the fact that there's no override.
Wanting things onto cars, why don't we just create cars that are self-driving from the start? So it's kind of interesting. It's also adorable.
That was the fictional comic idea they had in Silicon Valley, of course, where in that scenario, Hooli, which is the fake Google, the guy got in the car and he ended up in a shipping container and then ended up in the middle of the ocean.
They said, let me get your car. We'll take you home. And he got in the Hooli car and he says, home. And the car says, okay, here we go. And then all of a sudden, for no reason at all, the car says, whoa, wait a minute. We're rerouting. Right. And it does a big U-turn. He gets in a shipping container. He can't get out. And he's suddenly on an island that the Hooli founder is building. It's actually probably reflects a little bit of the real world thinking about
the fear.
Autonomous.
The fear about the robots taking over. Yes. Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. This is a huge cultural uphill battle from a marketing perspective, right, for Google to get consumers to accept this and get excited about it. I think this kind of video is the beginning of that. They have a lot of work to do.
The reason that works as comic writing is that we've all had that experience with Google Maps.
We feel that way.
How many times has Google Maps led you into the middle of the ocean or something like that? And you think, well, you know, it's a good thing that my car isn't directly tapped into this thing. Or anyway, I'd be mighty wet right now.
I like the idea. You know, what Ford always said to me is, well, we're going to start by driver assist and we're going to get you used to it by helping you. People, in fact, that's what Alan Mulally said. People like to drive. We're just going to give you tools to make you a safer, better driver.
Yeah,
and my car does that. You know, it knows when there's somebody in the blind spot, and it tells me if I try to go in that lane, things like that.
Yeah,
I think that's good. That's useful. I just totally don't like the idea of it not having any pedals, or there's just no override at all.
Yeah, right.
Presumably, a real self-driving car would have that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing about the scene in Silicon Valley, right? When he was saying, no, stop. I mean, clearly any car that does this would be designed to have some sort of override by the person. Yeah. And the, you know, like I had the impression that the person back at Hooli had said to the car, okay, now we're going to the island,
right?
And then it changed route and he wasn't able to override that. And, you know, whatever. I was like, this is
and then he got to the island and there's no humans there. It's all robots.
It's all just androids. It's all Android.
You can't get home. Here's a 25. Somebody sent me a Chevy Camaro crashing at 25 miles. Oh, that's a Volvo.
Okay.
Crashing at 25 miles an hour.
Well, that's not terrible.
You're not dead.
You're not dead, but you're pretty hurt. The front end is pretty smashed. Pretty smashed up in the front wheels.
We had a conversation about this with a BBC reporter who wrote about this on Tech News Today this morning, and Google is actually designing the navigation and the crash features to maximize human life, whether it's yours or someone else's. So theoretically, their system will deliberately kill you if it saves a gaggle of pedestrians.
Yeah. So that was this. We talked a little bit on this too. If there's a driver with a motorcyclist in the left lane with a helmet and one without a helmet in the right lane, and you have to quickly swerve. Do you go for the guy with or without the helmet? You're saying there will actually include programming
what,
in that?
They're vague about it, but what they're saying is that they take into account all the people around, pedestrians,
bicyclists. How many people will die?
Exactly.
How many people can we save?
Will they
kill you to save a lot of other people?
Apparently.
It's my car. I should survive.
See, is that the answer to that?
No.
I paid for this car.
I should survive because I'm in the car.
But that's the decision people make when they get an SUV. That's essentially what they're saying.
Right.
If there's a crash, we're living.
Every human makes that decision. That's why people buy big cars.
Exactly. They want to win.
That's why people aren't buying smart cars, because it looks like you'd lose, for sure. So
the premium non-ad supported version.
That's right.
That's what I want.
I expect that you prioritize my life.
That's right.
I'm willing to pay more for my car to prioritize my life. Wow. We're being silly, but these are the kinds of things that are going to crop up more and more as we get towards an artificial intelligence world where the machines are going to start making ethical decisions.
And what's funny about that, or what's actually not funny about that, is the fact that we're comfortable with the status quo. We're comfortable with the fact that cars are so dangerous because people are such bad drivers.
Yeah.
We're willing to sacrifice those victims.
Yeah.
But when a machine is making those decisions, even if fewer people die, we don't like that and we don't want it.
Yeah. Thanks to the chat room and Wikipedia, this is known as the trolley problem. Thought experiment in ethics first introduced by Philippa Foot in 1967. The general form of the problem is this. There's a runaway trolley barreling down the railway tracks. Ahead on the tracks, there are five people tied up and unable to move. The trolley's headed straight for them. You're standing some distance off in the train yard next to a lever. If you pull the lever, the trolley will switch to a different set of tracks. Unfortunately, you notice there's one person on the side track. So you can either hit with one person, or do nothing, and the trolley will kill five people. What's the correct choice? See, most of us would do nothing. I'm not going to choose.
They need to pull a rendition on Snidely Whiplash. Why are people tied to the tracks?
Why are people tied to the tracks? Actually, that wasn't the original formulation. It had to do with a judge and jury. And
I mean, so humans tend to empathize with the individual, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's tough. Yep. Right, and you could just do nothing and say, well, that's what was about to happen.
That's what I would do and say, hey, I'm washing my hands of it.
But, you know, and, yes. But this, because this problem was expressed in the 60s, they weren't dealing with, it's even a greater level of weirdness when you're writing algorithms to make these decisions, right? If you're actually preemptively, I mean, if you're in a trolley and you have to make a quick decision, that's one thing. But if you're
writing,
an
algorithm is easier because it's detached from the reality of it. So you can write an algorithm that says optimize for minimal life loss.
Yeah.
That is ethical and rational, and nobody's losing a life when you're writing the algorithm.
And you can see in advance what it's going to do, theoretically, I guess.
You just say maximize for minimal life loss.
And then hackers are going
to
go in there.
Soldiers at war make this decision all the time, right? I mean, people commanding people in combat have to make decisions about...
Oh, crap. Apple just bought Beats.
Did they?
Did they?
They did. $3 billion, not 3.2.
It's just crossing the wire now.
Wow. Couldn't they have done this during MacBreak Weekly?
I was wrong. This is from Peter Kafka, who works at Recode. And there's the link to the Recode article. Is there an Apple press release? That's what we really want to know.
Financial Times also has the story.
Yeah, they were the ones who broke it. Is there any confirmation from Apple, Chad? Do you see anything there?
Actually, the Financial Times broke the story. And yeah, it's... I really don't know.
Here's... The Verge says Apple has confirmed it, but I want to see Apple's confirmation.
Yeah, there you go.
The thing that Beats provides us is a head start, says Tim Cook. We could build about anything that you could dream of, but that's not the question, he said in an interview. The thing Beats provide us is a head start, and it provides us with incredible people, kindred spirits. Apple says it will keep the Beats hardware brand intact, as well as the Beats music streaming service. It also says Beats Electronics co-founders Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre will join the company as full-time employees. Wow, I would have never guessed that. In fact, I just didn't believe it at all, but apparently it is true. And Apple is confirming. What was that article from, Chad? Was that The Verge?
That was Recode.
I don't see it on Recode's front page. I hope we're not being...
Here's the full press release.
I hope we're not being punked.
No, on the... Well, I mean, maybe.
There it is.
All right. I want to see this on the Apple site before I'll submit, before I'll give up.
You know, the thing is, we've talked about this story for, a couple weeks now, at least 2.5 weeks?
Yeah.
3 weeks? And there isn't much more to say other than it appears that the price is $3 billion rather than $3.2 billion.
And that's actually what the leak yesterday, the day before,
right,
said, is
exactly.
It's a little less than they said.
Apple probably got a little bit, got a cheaper price because of the video, the Tyrese video.
Actually, the story was that because Apple found out that there were only 110,000 subscribers to the Beats Music streaming service, which is very small compared to, say, the 10 million of Spotify.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Still. You know, one of the things, if you search for Apple Buys Beats, you find the April Fool's joke in the Lefset's letter, which is a great letter for people who follow the music industry. Apple Buys Beats, but that was apparently a joke. This is not a joke, at least as far as we can tell. Apple has bought Beats.
There's been a lot
of
that.
I'm surprised. I really am surprised. And now, it made sense that they would confirm this before WWDC so that they could bring Dre up on stage. Here's the press release from the Apple website. Apple to acquire Beats Music and Beats Electronics. Total of $3 billion, consisting of a purchase price of approximately $2.6 billion. And approximately $400 million that will vest over time. Those are the handcuffs that keep Dre and Iovine in the employ of Apple. Jimmy Iovine said, I've always known in my heart that Beats belonged with Apple. The idea when we started the company was inspired by Apple's unmatched ability to marry culture and technology. Apple's deep commitment to music fans, artists, songwriters in the music industry is something special. Wow, that's a shocker. I really didn't believe it. Music is Eddie Q. Music is such an important part of Apple's DNA and always will be. The addition of Beats will make our music lineup even better, from free streaming with iTunes Radio, which already existed, to a world-class subscription service in Beats, and of course buying music from the iTunes Store, as customers have loved to do for years. And subject to regulatory approvals, Apple expects to close in fiscal Q4, which is the next quarter calendar year. That would be sometime in the third quarter calendar year.
Walter Isaacson, who's Steve Jobs' biographer, predicted that...
He said it would happen.
Jimmy Iovine would run Apple's content business, and that acquiring Jimmy Iovine was a major reason for this. And he also pointed out that Iovine and Steve Jobs were friends and kind of had a shared vision for music. And the reason for that was that Iovine, when the music industry was choking on the growing dominance of the iPod and iTunes in the early days, Iovine was saying all along that Apple is the future of music, and that's the right way to go, and that's the way to monetize music, and so on. So he kind of won over Steve Jobs for that reason. He supported the iPod and iTunes in the very earliest days.
I'm shocked. I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought it seemed like a very odd marriage. It's the first time Apple's ever bought cool instead of inventing it, and it is the biggest acquisition Apple has ever made.
Another piece of news is that the Beats Music iOS app just dropped their yearly pricing of to $99, and now it's a free trial. So
in other words, they dropped the paid subscription on Beats.
Yeah. So,
but is that only on iOS? Let me see if I can get a free Beats subscription on Android here.
Yeah, they lowered the price from $119.88 to $99.99.
Oh, so it's not free.
It's not free. I think there's a freemium version, but then they have a subscription upgrade.
So I mean, this was part of the story. Of course, Beats is the newest streaming music service. Beats acquired Moog some months ago, which was a very good streaming service, but they hadn't really gotten much traction. Even though AT&T offered it as a family plan for people who bought AT&T phones, $16 for unlimited users on a family plan. I broached that with my children. They said, "No way, we've got Spotify. We don't want Beats." Interesting. And of course, Beats is on Android. I just don't know if the deal will extend to Android. That would be an interesting move by Apple to say, "Yeah, we're gonna make this cheaper if you're using iOS."
Apple's paying for the deal with $2.6 billion in cash and $400 million in stock. That's, the New York Times is confirming that.
Right. Well, there you go. I guess we'll continue to cover this tonight on Tech News Tonight, and as time goes by, maybe we'll get some people on who can comment on it. Very interesting. I'm surprised.
Since the time passed, I didn't think that was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen.
I didn't think it was going to happen from day one. It just doesn't make sense from my point of view, but obviously it makes sense to Apple. So
I have what you said about it on tape.
Go ahead, play it. We recorded this because I knew I was wrong.
Yeah, here we go. Nope.
That's the exchange law. There we go. Rewind. It was a rumor created by Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine in an attempt to sell headphones and stock or whatever.
This was 17 days ago, Chad.
Jab some interest in a company that is actually failing.
Failing.
All right.
Now you've got
no need to rub it in.
Too far?
Yeah. Wait. Actually, I asked them to make a recording because I thought, you know, if it really does happen, then you can mock me endlessly.
And certainly a different Apple than the one Gruber did this great post on Daring Fireball about how, like, back in the day, I guess it was like 2000, there was a leak about an ATI Radeon getting included in the new Mac at the time, and that Jobs was so incensed and Apple was so upset that they basically ripped every single mention of it from the keynote at WWDC.
Yes.
They took it out of the machines. They were punished.
Right.
Terribly for just the leak. So when the leak happened and then all that time passed, it was like, maybe this really isn't going to happen. But Leo, you didn't think it was going to happen because you don't think that Apple needs to buy cool or that Apple wouldn't buy cool.
I don't really understand what the benefit to Apple is. It's not the headphone business. Although the revenue for Beats headphones was $1.3 billion last year. It's not the streaming music business because it's a crappy streaming music business. Nobody would say that Apple couldn't duplicate 110,000 subscriber streaming music business. Easy. In fact, Apple's always eschewed streaming music. They've had this opportunity for years and always turned away from it. So it ain't the headphones, it ain't the music business. It's got to be Jimmy Iovine, Dr. Dre, and whatever brand value Beats has. And I guess it's a very, very successful brand. But I don't know how it enhances. Does it enhance Apple's brand? You know, on Sunday on Twit, they said, "Oh, you know, you're too old, Leo. You think Apple's cool still, but young people in their 20s and earlier, don't think of Apple as cool. They think of Beats as cool. So this would make them think Apple was cooler because they own Beats." I find that very hard to believe. And I also have to point out that a number of companies have owned Beats and dumped them almost immediately. HP owned Beats and dumped it. Mm-hmm. HTC owned Beats and dumped it. If it's such a great deal, why did HTC and App and HP get out of the Beats business? It doesn't make sense to me at all. But
They were probably concerned about the future of Beats, but being owned by Apple means that Beats has a really bright future. They have, you know, obviously the most successful retail store chain ever. Apple does, and they'll continue to sell Beats in those stores, but now more tightly associated with Apple. So they own 65% of the high-end headphone market. That's the kind of thing that's the kind of position that Apple likes to be in. And you say, does this make Apple cool? Well, Apple is now Beats. Beats is now Apple. It doesn't make the Apple brand cool. It means Apple is now in possession of the cool Beats brand. So I think that's the next best thing to a halo effect. You know, financially, it doesn't matter because this is a pocket change for Apple, and it pays for itself in 3 years. And I just think that it's kind of a no-brainer. It's highly profitable. These things are extremely profitable. You can build these headphones for $15 and sell them for $200. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a business-wise, it's a fantastic business.
You know,
that's
Apple,
a really good point, Mike.
Here's my problem with it. Apple has never done that. Apple's always, right. And this is a sad day for Apple. Yeah. Apple has always said, we're not building products to be cool. We're not building products for high profit margin. We're trying to build the best products possible. And I don't think anybody can argue that Beats headphones are in any respect a good product. So it's a complete mismatch. And I don't think Jimmy Iovine or Dr. Dre, I mean, it must be for that. And I don't know how much they bring to the table. Surely any deal that Jimmy Iovine negotiated with the music industry is off the table as soon as Apple becomes a part of it. That's a very different deal. Apple dominates the music industry. The music industry hates iTunes at this point because they're terrified of them. Apple's been trying to make content deals with Comcast and other television companies, and there's some supposition that maybe Iovine can walk into those boardrooms and make a deal. I don't think these companies are swayed by personality. I think they're swayed by the business. And if the business doesn't make sense, they're not going to do it, however much they love Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen. I mean, just because a company buys a company doesn't mean it's a good idea just to witness Time Warner AOL.
I think I got to believe that there's something to the idea that what they purchased was membership in the tight-knit community of the music business. You know, Iovine and Dr. Dre are now part of Apple, and these folks are these people are inside the music, way insiders, right? So that comes across in two ways. First of all, when it comes to making deals, it's not just the fact that Iovine himself can negotiate deals, but it's the fact that, you know, these Apple people are one of us when they go in, you know. This is the perspective by the music business. The other thing is that I believe that Beats Music is viewed, has some of the dynamics of a social network. And if you look at how Twitter, you know, part of Twitter's secret sauce is that so many celebrities, so many famous people are constantly referencing Twitter. And I think they want to have the celebrity-obsessed music service, streaming music service, and social streaming
music
service.
So not the Apple I know. This is not an Apple that is all about surface, that it's all about appearance. Not the Apple that's all about quality content.
Look
products.
How quickly Apple changed when they fired Steve Jobs and when Steve Jobs left initially.
Yeah.
And how quickly they changed when he came back.
Yeah.
This is actually a very, very subtle change, but the Apple that you know is Steve Jobs' Apple. And he's been gone for a few years now, and this is the new Apple.
So just to repeat, the breaking news is Apple has bought Beats for $3 billion. $400 million of its stock options. It'll vest over time. Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre will become Apple executives with the deal. They expect it to close pending regulatory approval in the third quarter of this year. You know what? We'll find out of course, Apple's got a big event coming up on Monday. We're going to cover this live. You and I will be here in the studio. And Andy Anacco and Renee Ritchie will be at the keynote at WWDC and then come up here for Mac Break Weekly. So Monday we'll be covering this starting at 10 a.m. Pacific. That's where you're going to see, I think the reason they've announced this is you're going to see Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine take the stage along with Angela Ahrens, maybe Jay Blonick, the new team, right? The new Apple celebrity star power team. Maybe Johnny Ive will step up there as well.
And is it too much to hope for Eminem? Who Dr. Dre produces.
He does. He discovered Eminem. He discovered Snoop.
50 Cent.
Bring Snoop and 50 up. Although, don't let 50 throw a baseball.
No.
Whatever you do, because that guy, he's wild.
Yeah.
I think it's a terrible, terrible idea. And there may be some interesting stuff that we'll learn later that makes it make sense, but I just don't think this makes sense at all.
Well, do we think Beats Music is better than Ping?
No, it's all this. Oh, Ping.
Ping, yeah.
Anything's better than Ping. It's not better than iTunes Radio. And it's not better than any of the other streaming services. Basically, I think all of them are seen as commodity services. Yeah. When Jimmy Iovine launched the Beats Music service, he said, oh, no, this is going to be all about recommendation. We're going to get major celebrities and their playlists. And I didn't see any of that happen with Beats. It was no better or worse, to be fair, than Spotify, RDO, Rhapsody, all the other services. I subscribe to Google Music. I'm sure you do, too, because we got that $7.99 deal. Same 20 million songs. In fact, I like the Google service because I've uploaded 25,000 of my own records to it. So it knows my music as well as all of these other songs. I think it's a better service. I just don't see why, you know, I guess if it's Apple branded Beats, you know, Apple's been doing iTunes Radio for how many months and no one knows about it.
Right. That's right.
It has no presence.
Yeah, I haven't even tried it. I launched iTunes recently after a long time, and I didn't know how to use it anymore.
Right.
Just iTunes, like the desktop app. I was like, what is this? It just changed a lot, and things are buried. It was hard to find playlists. I haven't tried iTunes Radio. I didn't realize it was a new thing,
right,
or a relatively recent one.
Very, very odd. Very odd indeed. All right, let's take a break. We're going to come back and get the Google changelog here for you. TrueCrypt is gone, and there's a very big story there, which we'll talk about, and a whole lot more as we continue with This Week in Google, which is really about anything we want to talk about at all. Our show today brought to you by Hover.com. I just registered a bunch more domain names with Hover.com. I love Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management made simple, main clean, main clear. I'm a big fan of Hover. As soon as I could, I had Hover. I had transferred all my domains over to Hover. They actually have a concierge service, which I should have taken advantage of, that'll do it for you if you want to move over to Hover. Then the domain management is as simple as can be. They do allow you to do email, which, by the way, if you say, well, I'm never going to want a web page, what do I need a domain name for? You need a domain name so that you can have a professional email address with your business name or your family name that you can then forward to Gmail. You're not giving up Gmail, but you could then forward to Gmail. And if you decide someday that, you know, Yahoo Mail or some other mail is better, you never have to change your address. It's your address for life. That's a very good reason to register a domain name at Hover.com. Right now, Hover, of course, they've got all the top domain name extensions. .com, .net, but they've also just got the .club, which I really like. If you're, the International Order of Oddfellows here in Petaluma, you could have PetalumaOddfellows.club. You know, I think that, yeah, don't you think that's cool?
I'll tell the rest of the members.
Gina Trapani Fan.club. I think
Mickey Mouse dot club.
Dot club.
Well, Disney probably has
don't
that already.
Plant any suggest- yeah, Mickey Mouse dot club. I like
it. I love it. And Hover, you know, when you register a domain name, they do not give you that, you know, 50-click upsell or anything. They're going to give you Whois privacy free on every domain that supports it. That's really important. Most people want that, and they know that. They've got great service. Their no hold, no transfer phone service means when you call, a live person is ready to help and is empowered to help and get you on your way without putting you on hold. And they're really great people. They're Canadian. Of course, they're nice. Hover.com. I want you to register your domain names there. Get that new .club domain name, FloridaRotary.club. Instead of FloridaRotaryClub.com, you know, that's cool, .club. I got a bunch of .clubs the other day. What do you got? Let's see if we can get twit.club.
Oh, twitfan.club. I like that.
Twitfan.club.
BabySeals.club.
Stop that.
Pete already owns that one.
I love it. Is there a Twit fan club?
No. There's twitaddict.club. Twitadmirer.club.
I like it.
Twitfanatic.com.
Hey, one other thing I tell you, if you decide to buy, please do me a favor. Use the offer code TWIG and the number 5, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Hover.com. Play the trumpets, my friends, unless we use the trumpeters up, because it's time for the Google change log. A lot of buttons to push for Chad. First, take down the hover.
The Google change log.
We'll fix it in post. And now Gina Trapani has the latest from Google.
Just a couple of things this week. Google finally launched a mobile web version of the Play Store. So if you navigate to play.google.com and any mobile device, you'll be able to actually navigate the site instead of getting the big stretched out desktop version on a smaller touchscreen. You know, of course, normally on an Android phone, for example, a Play Store link would launch the native Play Store app, but you know, the mobile web interface comes in handy if you're on a non-Android device or if you're looking at an app or an item that's not compatible with your current device. The new mobile web version looks really nice and pretty long overdue, gotta say. Google releases Virus Total Uploader for OS X. This is a virus scanning app, which Google acquired, I think, back in 2012. And the uploader for OS X, Google's hoping to get more malware submissions to beef up Mac security. Basically, you download the app onto your Mac, you run it, you can drag and drop a file to the Virus Total Uploader in order to scan it. Over 50 antivirus solutions, you can drag and drop a folder, you can drag and drop a Mac application, or you could do the open with and beef up security on your Mac desktop. Finally, Google is the Chrome team is taking a hard line against malicious extensions, speaking of malware, for Windows users. Google is now blocking Chrome extensions not listed in the Chrome Web Store for Windows users and only Windows users.
What?
And they're disabling current extensions Windows users have installed that aren't listed in the Web Store. Yeah, this is a little crazy. So you're a Windows user, you've got Chrome installed, you've got an extension installed that's maybe local or you didn't get from the Chrome Web Store, and it'll be disabled in the current, the stable version of Chrome. So this new policy only applies to Windows users running the stable and beta versions of Chrome. It doesn't impact people using Canary or Dev or Mac, Linux, or Chrome OS users. So just Windows users. So I don't know. We're all safer for it. If you're a Chrome user on Windows, do check out your extensions and make sure that nothing got auto disabled.
This drives me nuts.
Google's encouraging developers to upload their extension to the web store.
Chad?
Go ahead, Chad.
Yeah, I'd use an extension called YouTube Center because for our job, I need to download
lots. It's
like
a third party.
You go and you download it off of GitHub, and then you can drag and drop it onto your extensions page, and it'll install, but it's only locally.
That's inherently risky, though,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to trust the source. I guess they just don't trust users to do that anymore.
I wish that it had an Android-like, trust unknown sources checkbox that you could say, hey, look, I know what I'm doing. Let me run this. Because, I don't know. Maybe there might be a reason why a developer might not want to upload their extension to the web store, a legitimate reason, for example. So, Chad, what did you do? Did you wind up installing the Canary channel?
Well, this is actually the first time I've noticed. When I normally have to do it is on Fridays for a show that I do, and it's I'll have to deal with that on Friday to figure out how to get around it. Installing Canary is what I'll have to do, work around it that way.
That's all I got.
And that's the Google change log. Oh yeah. Play the drums slowly. Thank you, Gina Trapani. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know if this is a hack or if something serious has gone on with TrueCrypt. We've recommended TrueCrypt whole disk encryption and file encryption for a long time as the best choice, open source choice for disk encryption. In fact, there was a crowdfunded project to audit TrueCrypt for security, which has already got underway a little bit, and phase one is complete, and there is a report. TrueCrypt, because it's open source, I've recommended it as a long favorite choice for encryption, because you can see if the NSA or anybody else has a backdoor in it. But if you go today to TrueCrypt.org, you're going to be very surprised by this notice. And I, you know, there's two possibilities. One, that this is a legitimate notice from TrueCrypt, or the other is that it's been hacked. And I don't know which is the case, and nobody's reporting this yet. Warning, using TrueCrypt is not secure, as it may contain unfixed security issues. This has to be.
What? But this is SourceForge.
Could it be hacked? The development of TrueCrypt was ended in May 2014 after Microsoft terminated support of Windows XP. They're encouraging you to migrate from TrueCrypt to Microsoft's closed source BitLocker. I have to think this is a hack. But it's something we're going to watch with interest. Steve Gibson's tweeting about it. He says he's seen an unsubstantiated rumor that it has something to do with tonight's interview with Edward Snowden. Brian Williams has an exclusive interview with the NSA leaker. I've got to think this has been a hack. This just doesn't even look right.
Because Snowden has talked about TrueCrypt.
He's recommended it, as have I, as has Steve, for years. I think this is a prank, but I'm just going to point it out, and we'll wait and see with interest what happens. It doesn't seem like if this is how a open source project would terminate itself with a recommendation to use BitLocker.
Yeah.
I think this is almost certainly a prank.
It's not very funny.
I'm not laughing.
Yeah, and then there've got to be other places where TrueCrypt does TrueCrypt have a Twitter account or another page.
Yeah, let's see.
TrueCrypt.org redirects to
SourceForge. TrueCrypt.SourceForge.net. Yeah. You know, that's a good question. Let me see if there is a Twitter account, because maybe they're saying something on the Twitter account.
Is TrueCrypt audited yet?
It is. That's real. That's actually a real site, and that's the crowdsourced project that we were talking about. And, as they say, in part, there is a thread going on at Hacker News where people are talking about it. And in order of likelihood, defaced site, time to screw up a big announcement, rogue code maintainer, or phase two of audit turned up something rather bad. I don't think it's the case. I think it has to be a prank. And there is a new binary on there, which I would not recommend downloading. It's a .exe file. Do not.
It's dated yesterday.
Yeah, so but the signature matches, which is a little concerning. That's not how an open source project would terminate things, however.
No. Yeah. No, it isn't.
They've been hacked, I would almost certainly say. Which is kind of sad. You're an open source expert, Gina. Could it be a bad commit that would include a page change?
You know, I haven't used SourceForge, so I'm not sure how that works. But I know that on GitHub, you can manage the site. You know, you can manage the actual pages for the webs of the user facing website in GitHub. So on GitHub, that would be possible. Someone could if they got commit master access to the repository, could actually update the website to say, you know, use BitLocker instead. Yeah.
Steve's pointing out, as I mentioned, as is mentioned on Hacker News, that the EXE is signed by the same key as the normal TrueCrypt sign. The signature is correct, but that means just more a bigger hack, if you ask me. I don't think that's – I mean – I don't know what this means. This is not how things would normally end. But with any open source project, you know, things can go south in odd ways. We'll follow this with any
software project.
Any project. wow. That is just weird. We'll follow that, continue to follow that with interest. And again, so now there's two big stories for tech news tonight. And if you want to go to breaking news, Mike Elgin, please be my guest. Wow, what a day this has been. What a weird, weird day. Let's take a break while people can gather their thoughts and we can figure out what's going on here. And come back with more. We'll have some Google stuff. I'm sure.
We will.
Although the next big story is Yahoo planning YouTube rival. Okay, that's Google. It's an anti-Google story. Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you finally can get everything about your financial life in a single spot. Know exactly where you stand. PersonalCapital.com/twig. And you can find out more about it. Here's the deal. I think I need to kind of explain this. I've talked to Personal Capital folks. In fact, I've known them for 2 years when Bill Harris, the founder of Personal Capital, was on Triangulation. He was on Triangulation to talk about a lot of things, including money, authentication, Bitcoin, all of that stuff, former PayPal CEO and Intuit CEO. And he mentioned just kind of offhandedly, and I'm starting this new thing, Personal Capital, and we talked about that. I joined it at the time. There's a couple of routes you can follow if you're planning for your future. One, you can, and most of you probably do this, I hope, you invest money, you save it. Maybe you have a brokerage account or with one of the big online brokerages, and you just kind of do it yourself. And I bet you don't pay as much attention to it as you ought to. The other choice people have, of course, is to go to a bank or to one of the storefronts and get a broker and let him tell you what to do. Never went for that myself. I'm kind of like to do it myself. But in both cases, you may not be getting the best advice. You may not really be managing your money right. And that's what Personal Capital is all about. It's about empowering you to do the job right. Not more time on your part, but more information, better information. What you'll do is you'll go to personalcapital.com. You'll sign up for this free account. And I'll explain how it can be free in a second. And you'll get a dashboard that shows all of your stuff, what you own, what you owe, what your investments. It'll show you how your portfolio is performing. And this is really important, and let's not gloss over it. Allocation of your portfolio, that's very important. How much is in equities, international equities, United States equities, how much is in bonds. You'll learn all about that with a single click of the mouse. You'll figure out what you're paying in fees for advisors and investments. They'll have a 401k fee analyzer that'll tell you if you're wasting your money. You know, it's possible to really throw away your 401k. You don't want to do that. A mutual fund fee calculator and a lot more. Now, here's how they make money. They are certified financial planners, and not everybody will get this treatment, but if you wish, you can have advice from them. They're not selling anything. They're not salesmen. They're there to give you that advice. But if you want to just use the software, you can. It's kind of the best of both worlds. Unbiased, useful information, all the data you need. And this is free. PersonalCapital.com/twig. It's wealth management for the digital age. I invite you to try it out. No risk, no obligation. And I think you'll find it useful. And, we love our fans. We want them to make sure that they're not eating Alpo once they retire. We want to take care of you. PersonalCapital.com. I did it immediately, and I love it. PersonalCapital.com/TWIG. We heard this rumor before, that Yahoo was going to build its own YouTube. Ad Age is now confirming it because Yahoo, I guess, is approaching creators and advertisers. Mm-hmm. So you can't keep this kind of stuff secret for too long. What do we know about Yahoo's YouTube? Anything?
Well, we know that they are
expensive. The ad rates are 50 to 100% higher than YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube is not expensive. According to TubeMogul, which Chad always is recommending, the cost per thousand is under $10 for YouTube, which is actually, that's what radio is. Mm-hmm. It's not what we are. We're a lot more. We're about $70. Yahoo's not commenting, of course, but they have been apparently approaching some big names on YouTube saying, hey, when you want, we could give you more money if you come over here, because along with that bigger ad bill, they would also be able to pay more. They're ramping up talks, according to Ad Age, with video producers. Plan to debut this summer. They wanted to do an upfront in April. That's where you go to advertisers and tell them what you're going to do and sign up long-term contracts. That did not happen. They're telling YouTube creators more generous revenue-sharing deals or fixed ad rates that are higher, so you know exactly how much you're going to make. Creators will be allowed to establish their own channels, host their videos on Yahoo, just like YouTube. And just like YouTube, Yahoo's video player will be embeddable on other sites. Publishing dashboard. Chad, you're a YouTube guy.
Yeah.
Would this be compelling? And the key is it's not exclusive, I think, right?
It would have to not be exclusive, especially in the beginning, unless if someone wants to take a really big risk. The biggest issue that I see is YouTube is just the portal that a lot of people, a lot of younger people,
that's where the people are.
That's where they are. They go to it like their homepage. They show up there almost like Netflix to find out what's going to entertain them today, and getting and changing that behavior is by far the hardest thing that Yahoo would have to do. I'm excited to hear that there
it's
might
good to have
be competition.
Absolutely. That's what's good.
Right now, on the YouTube creator side, YouTube takes 45% of ad revenue. And if Yahoo was to come in and say, not only are we charging our advertisers 20 to 50% more, you're also going to get 20 to 50% more from us, from our ad revenue, that would be some amazing competition.
Yeah, it seems like that's the opportunity, right? Is to treat creators better than YouTube has been treating them. But then, like Chad said, getting viewers to switch over, right? Because viewers aren't finding their videos embedded on web pages, right? They're going to YouTube.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And of course, there are going to be a lot of creators on YouTube who feel like they're just not getting any traction. They're not getting the traffic they want. I mean, there are a few stars, and we always focus on the big stars, but for every star, there's 100,000 people who are not able to really become famous, and they'll be happy to jump ship and try to become stars in the new network if this, in fact, happens. Of course, Yahoo failed to acquire Daily Motion for $300 million some time ago. Marissa Mayer has basically been talking about building a YouTube-like presence for Yahoo for a long time. And, you know, essentially before Yahoo, her only job was Google. So she's been sort of aggressively trying to recreate Google at Yahoo to a certain extent. And this is a big, big part of it.
Isn't that funny how she's just doing the Google roadmap one after another?
That's probably why they hired her. Because every time Yahoo tried to, you know, compete in the new world where portals are no longer a relevant cultural phenomenon, Google is always there eating their lunch. So I think that to a certain extent, they failed with multiple CEOs. And when they went with Marissa Mayer, they basically said, you know, let's be the new Google. Let's compete with Google on its own terms. And she's been aggressively doing that, mostly using the old model, which is just keep buying things and keep shutting things down.
And that's going to be the problem. She's got to face that reputation when she goes to creators and says, please come here. As long as it's not exclusive, I could see people doing it. They're not going to lose their YouTube presence, and they have the potential to make some more money.
One thing Yahoo has that is pretty powerful.
Tumblr.
Exactly. Tumblr. There's a huge network of a lot of young people, and it's a distribution network that's got a pretty good reputation among a certain crowd of people. And it's viral. It's a highly viral social bloggy kind of a service that is perfect for video.
Can you post video on Tumblr? You used to be able to. You can still.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it works with a couple different sites. I'm sure that there are plenty of people out there who would love to make their living making videos. And if Yahoo can enable, who maybe couldn't do that with the YouTube deal, with any deal they get with YouTube, if Yahoo can offer that to them. And, you know, I don't know that Mayer is rebuilding Google. I mean, this makes sense because it's content, right? And that's what Yahoo is. It's content. It seems like she and the company is committed to making great content. And this is what this, you know, this seems like this is the direction it's going in.
It does fit what Yahoo's been all along, which is a content company.
Right.
And boy, there's no better way to, you know, play the game than to create a video site. Although let's not forget that Yahoo bought broadcast.com, which was also many moons ago from Mark Cuban, made him a billionaire, and shuttered it within a year. Good. Like you said, Chad, let's have some competition. Nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
A great idea. And speaking of competition, Google, I have to admire Google. You know, when they started Google Fiber, they always said, this isn't a business for us. We just want to show the path. And what's happened is in almost every market where Google has announced gigabit fiber, the other incumbents in the market have said, oh, we can do that. At first, the reaction was, who is that from? Time Warner? oh, we don't think our customers really want space like that.
Yeah.
But now everybody, Cox is going to start its gigabit rollout in Phoenix, Las Vegas, and Omaha, Nebraska. AT&T is starting gigabit rollouts as well. This is good. Google did the right thing.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They kicked everybody in the behind.
And they have the best service out there. They really
Google
do.
Does.
Google Fiber is, if you're in a Google Fiber area, the cost per speed or whatever, however, no matter what metric you use, they just have the very best service. And it's just fantastic to see them driving competition. I just hope that they get into all these cities. There's a long list of cities that they intend to get in. As of today, they're only in two cities, which is Austin and Salt Lake City, I believe. Kansas City, right?
Kansas. They started in Kansas City.
And Provo, Utah.
Then they moved to Provo, and then they moved to Austin.
Austin's probably next on the block.
Although Austin now has a number of choices, according to Brian
Brushwood. AT&T. Yeah, exactly. So exactly as you're saying. But
this really bugs me because all of these companies have said, oh, we can't do that. It'd be too expensive. Right. Nobody wants it. And as soon as Google comes in the market, wait a minute, we can do that.
Well, but to their defense, essentially what AT&T's position was is that all these companies have wanted to lay fiber, wanted to do all kinds of things, and cities have been dragging their feet saying, well, you have to go through this process, you have to go through that process. And Google did something really bold. They said, we're having a contest. We're having tryouts. Make it fast. And they had everybody competing against each other, and that competition behind the scenes of that competition was city government saying, you know what, we're just going to green light all this stuff that normally we're going to get rid of all the red tape for you. And we promise you, we're not going to give you any obstructions. And then Google cherry picked those markets. And once they've got all that red tape swept away, other companies can then come in and say, well, if that's how we're doing it, then we'll do it too. So Google, I think the genius of this was the sort of DARPA grand challenge approach where you have a contest and you have city governments competing with each other.
And the city governments woke up and they're going to do the same thing, I presume, for these other gigabit providers. Now, maybe Google will do exactly the same thing for open internet, for net neutrality. They've said publicly at Google Fiber, we don't charge for peering and we don't have fast lanes, that we think this is good for customers. We from the blog post, we don't charge because it's really a win-win-win situation. It's good for content providers. I'm going to raise my hand here because they can deliver really high-quality streaming video to their customers. It's good for us because it saves us money. It's easier to transport video from a local server. Oh, they're talking about caching, local caching,
right?
Co-location. And Netflix has offered this, the Open Connect system, for some time. Now, we had a great conversation. I want to point people to the conversation we had yesterday on security. Now, Steve Gibson brought in Brett Glass, who you probably know.
I do.
We've all known for years. He was a longtime writer for – you probably worked for you at PC World at some point.
I think he wrote for us.
Yeah. He's also worked for InfoWorld, and I think he writes for PC Mag. But he's also a internet service provider. He does a wireless internet service in Laramie, Wyoming, called Lariat.net. And he was very adamant that any kind of internet regulation would be a bad idea, not just for him but for customers, and that the idea of net neutrality cannot in any way be pursued reasonably by the FCC without causing huge problems. And he actually, I think he made a very coherent case why the Title II regulation that we've been calling for, the Telecommunications Act regulation that would say the FCC declares the broadband providers common carriers. He said that's going to, the kinds of regulation that would bring in would really become a problem. Then you got the government really with its hands in the gears. So he made a good case there. I'm not sure he made such a good case for why internet service providers should charge edge providers as well as its customers. But it's a good conversation. I highly recommend Security Now yesterday for that. And thank you, Google, for making the world a little bit better place.
Well, you know, it's funny that they step forward in a blog post as an ISP, Google Fiber as an ISP, and said, you know, we don't believe in this payment for access because guess who the number two is? It's YouTube. Right, they're the payer, and that's a much bigger equation.
Kind of what Brett said is it's very easy for them to say this as an ISP, but you know what? Frankly, their business
That's
is
right.
on the other side.
And they've never admitted to paying, but they almost certainly
they
do.
Have to be.
They have to. Yeah. And they do believe in co-location, which is where you essentially mirror everything. You mirror everything that Netflix has right. in your servers to deliver it to the last mile. And that's a good thing for everybody. And we need to constantly remind people that whenever we talk about net neutrality, we're talking about the last mile. We're not talking about peering relationships.
At all.
That.
Right.
At
it's
all.
Not about the
That's
interconnect.
That's a totally different thing.
It's about your driveway right. we're talking.
That's right.
The information, you covered this, I'm sure, on Tech News Today a couple of days ago.
Yep.
The information said that Google is thinking via its Nest division about buying Dropcam. We love those Dropcam, the wireless cameras. We have them all over the studio. They're Wi-Fi based. They're good. They'd be a That's nice right. appliance to add. But do you think it would raise, Gina, any issues with people to know that you have a Google-owned camera in your house?
Oh, good heavens.
Well, you know, with Nest and whatever. I'm now, I have a child of the age where I'm now, we're now talking about nanny cams and that kind of thing.
Get a drop cam. You'll love it.
Yeah. Is it a great product?
Yeah, you can see our drop cams. I don't know how many of them are up. Let me see. twit.tv/dropcams is the website. Let's see. If any of them are up. We take them down, right? Because why? Because they break?
No, we don't take them down.
Oh, okay. So you see we have, there's only one offline. That's the my office. I think somebody comes in and unplugs that. But you can see Chad at work here. You can see, we use it to monitor our reception desk because we don't always have somebody at the front desk. So we monitor the front door.
You know, the once again, Google tends to line up with a rational argument and expects the public to be rational, which they never are. So it's an emotional argument to say that we don't want Google cameras in our house. In fact, we all have them already.
Google's looking at us right now.
You have a camera right there. And you have Chrome open, right? You have an Android phone. You have a tablet. Okay, these things have cameras in them. They're already pointed inside your house at your life. So it's this is going to be a great couple of years from now for the next couple of years and coming up on Google I/O and WWDC we're going to hear about this. We're finally getting to the point where we have consumer level home automation, and that's going to involve cameras. It's going to involve sensors. It's going to involve gadgets. It's going to involve APIs. And that's what I believe we're going to hear about at WWDC and also Google I/O. Lots and lots of APIs. Remember, like 2 years ago, Gina, was it 3 years ago? 2 years ago, when Google was talking about Android at home.
Android at home.
And then
not
they went silent. Right.
Nothing. Yep.
So I'm certain that that's coming back this year. Everybody's going to be talking about home automation. This Dropcam is a play for home automation. Now, Dropcam also makes a little inexpensive a device that you can just attach to anything, and it's a motion detector. So if that little device moves, you get a notification, and the notification can tell you anything you want it to tell you. So it has a sticker, so you put it on a window. When the window opens, you get a notification that somebody opened the window. Or you put it on...
I think this is great.
You know, it's sensors.
Of course, we heard the rumor that Apple would be announcing something on Monday at WWDC having to do with home automation. I think that's going to get overshadowed a little bit by the new news.
Yeah.
Maybe they will do that. Maybe they won't do that. But I think a lot of attention is going to be paid to Beats.
The press, but that's a developers' conference, and the developers won't care about Beats.
Developers don't care about Beats at all. They want to hear about home automation.
Exactly.
Mary Meeker, I'm going to put on a wig here and just call me Mary. Every year, Mary Meeker does a presentation. She's with the Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers. She is considered, before that, she was a Wall Street analyst. She's considered probably the person to watch when it comes to internet prognostication. Today she did her annual State of the Internet speech. And thank you, Mary Meeker, she puts her slides up every year. I'll tell you, these are the slides. They're rich with content. Yep. So I haven't had a chance to look at these. They just went up, but we can talk a little bit about them. The high-level user usage trends, the big one to me, mobile data traffic is up 81%, hugely accelerating growth. And she says the video is the driver here. That's, it to me, interesting. It's interesting for our business, but it's interesting in general.
Yeah.
Tablets, 52% early-stage rapid unit growth. She says tablets are very hot, not a surprise. Although I predict we're going to see a drop-off in tablets. I really think...
We're not already seeing a drop off in time. I thought
Apple
was already
did.
A drop.
Apple did.
They did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Apple did. But that was one quarter, so I don't know if that's enough.
it's shifting away from the high-end Apple disposable income people to the low-cost, global, you know, inexpensive
but,
Android.
But the takeaway from that slide is mobile usage growth is very, very strong. 81% over the year. Smartphone users only at – now, in the U.S., it's something like 80% are smartphone users. But globally, only 30% of the potential 5.2 billion mobile phone user base, only a third is smartphones. So there's a big upside, but the upside's not in the U.S. And you can see the trend is really growing.
Speaking of the U.S., she has an interesting stat here. She says that 97% of smartphone market share are made in the U.S. operating systems like Android, iOS, Windows Phone, and so on. 97%. Remember when the,
well,
the
now world, that Nokia is a U.S. company, it's that's not that surprising.
Not that that matters. Not that their market share is going to hugely
Asha
move the needle.
And other other platforms are pretty big. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. And they're now also in the
look
Android
at this,
business.
Look at these tablet sales graph. The green line is desktop PCs going down. Blue line netbooks, notebook PCs going up. But the yellow line, the one that just appeared all of a sudden in 2010, is already growing faster than PCs ever did. 52% of the market's tablet. We're definitely in a post-PC era. I wonder, though, in the next 3 years what that graph's going to look like. If it might just look like a big spike.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the reason I say that is because I think I agree with her. Mobile is where it's at, and mobile phones are the – that's where the big growth is going to be. But she says tablet has a lot of growth ahead of it.
She says 66%, which is two-thirds, of tablet owners surf the web while watching TV. Two-thirds of tablet owners.
That's true in our house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of you?
Two-thirds of us watch when they... I'm the only one sitting and actually watching the TV. Isn't that true? It's true. I watch the show. They're doing their tablet thing, and every once in a while they say, what happened? What just happened? Wait, how about at your house, Gina?
Yeah, 100%. 100% were our phones and tablets and notebooks,
It is so disconcerting to me, and now I know I am old, because nobody pays attention to anything anymore.
You know, Gina, that's not true. Your baby isn't using a tablet. There's two-thirds at your house, too.
She is not, but she demands Elmo's song on my phone. So she sees my phone, she demands Elmo.
Wow.
Internet advertising growing, and mobile is 40%, is up 47%. But still a lot of room for growth there.
But that's huge growth.
That was massive. The question, was it, how do they monetize mobile? Well, apparently somebody's figured out how to do that. Print remains way over indexed. I think that means it's not good. Mobile app revenue still trumps mobile ad revenue. You want to make money on mobile, sell an app, not an ad. 68% of mobile revenue is apps. She talks a little bit about cyber threats. Eesh, this is depressing. A vulnerable system placed on the internet today will be compromised within 15 minutes. 95% of all networks are compromised in some way. Let's move on, shall we? And she's talking about this is a really great slideshow. You've got to kind of parse through it, and there's, as you can see, she loves dense slides. I would love to be at that event and see how long she spends per slide. I bet you she goes whiz whiz whiz.
I'd like to see Edward Tufte review her charts.
Yeah, no, Edward would not be happy. She's talking about education. There's reason for optimism. 8 in 10 Americans say they care about education. Graduation rates are rising from high school. That's good. Online courses making a big difference here. For instance, year to year, Khan Academy's YouTube channel has grown 69%. iTunes U Open University downloads up 59%. 7 million students enrolled in Coursera courses. This is good. That's really makes me happy. Here's comparing Duolingo, which is a language platform we highly recommend, with Coursera. It's very much international. The red is North America on both these pie charts. And you can see that 29% of international of users for Duolingo are in Latin America. 30% are in Europe. 11% are in Asia. And it's actually pretty well distributed in Coursera. This is kind of cool that 25% of Coursera users are in Asia, 23% are in Europe, 11% are in Latin America, 6% are in Africa and Oceania. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, although they're wasting their time. The technology the technology for a simultaneous translation is getting so good.
And did you see that Microsoft Skype demo that Microsoft did at Recode?
No. What was that?
Yeah, they
I'll play it for you.
Yeah, I'll sort of give a preamble to it. Microsoft demonstrated a future version of Skype that they said is coming out soon that simultaneously translates what your conversation. So you talk in one language and you say, okay, translate this into German. And in within a second, the translation is on the screen and then it's read by a computer. And then that person talks in that foreign language and it's read back into English.
Now, don't feel bad, Google lovers, because this is I'll skip ahead a little bit. But don't feel bad because you know that Google is going to show something like this at
Absolutely.
Google I.O.
Because
Google's got this core technology.
That's right.
But this is very cool. You go ahead and turn up.
And that's the gentleman who demoed it.
For over a decade.
Yeah, see, this is not the demo, and I want to find it. But he's talking to a German colleague. He's speaking English. She's speaking German. And Skype is simultaneously translating it. Let me see if I can. This is not the clip that I thought it was. The demo Recode is perhaps better than this. Let me go back and find that.
Yeah, but we're entering into a new world of translation where so many different apps are getting really great translation technology. It's still not perfect. Even this isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good and very fast.
Yeah, really.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah. So I'll show you, Gina, because you'll want to see this. Let me get out of the ad.
Darn advertising.
There's a Microsoft ad. Don't you hate advertisements? All right, here
this
you
is
go.
It. Yeah.
So he's speaking.
Hallo, Diane. Wie dir?
Oh, wait a minute. Now that's actually a translation. So let's go back a little bit.
Right.
He's going to speak to his German colleague
Hello,
in English.
Hallo, Diane. How are you doing?
Hallo, Diane. Wie dir?
That was about a second and a half.
Hallo, mein Freund.
Hello, my friend.
Even I understood that.
Yeah.
It's kindergarten German.
That's right. There's actually some complex sentences that
a little later on. Yeah. And actually, the English transcription isn't perfect.
No. And the Germans in the audience said that the German wasn't great either.
It wasn't perfect, but understandable. And that's the key, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's still going to be better than if you take, 6 weeks to learn a foreign language.
Can you imagine us doing shows with international contributors who don't speak English sometime in the near future? Wouldn't that be amazing?
We should do that on purpose.
They say this will be available in a beta test later this year. Her German, on the other hand, is excellent.
Yeah. Yes. Very clear.
Wouldn't it be fun?
Yeah. But really, I mean, we're 10 years from now. I mean, come on. It's going to be so great to have all this, on the one hand, it's going to be great to be able to translate everything. On the other hand, it's really going to suck the wind out of everyone's motivation to learn a foreign language. Because what's
it's
the point?
True. That's really cool. That's really cool, I have to say. But, doing a show like that, I mean, there's a reason why on TV they edit it so that the translator is speaking, kind of over the person,
right?
Because it's just so slow. There's those long, awkward pauses. If there was any crosstalk whatsoever, it would get weird. That's why I really like that app that, I don't know if it's a Glass app or if it's a phone app where you point it at,
Word Lens.
Word Lens.
Yeah.
And it just changes it and it's in the same font. Like, that feels really seamless and magical to me. Like, that Skype demo was pretty cool. But that would be a long, tedious conversation.
Yeah. But of course, Google just bought a Word Lens. And I think Google, if anybody is the best situated to do this.
That's right.
Google Translator is already phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I imagine they'll have this kind of capability.
I believe in a category of computing that is really just barely getting off. And I call it hearable computing. Where you essentially have an earpiece where everything is language. So you talk to it.
Have
it
you
talks
seen
to
her?
You. Yeah, exactly. But
did you see her yet, Gina?
I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list.
Oh, my God.
I know. Everyone loved it. That's why it's been on my list.
But that's where we're going. That's where we're going. And think about that for translation. You talk and it tells you.
So Keanu Reeves. I'm sorry. Phoenix.
River Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix is an attractive, good-looking guy. Yes, he wears high-water pants, but apparently everybody in the future will. So that's okay.
That's the most depressing fact.
Yeah, we're all going to be wearing high water pants. But he is a little lonely. He's just gone through a divorce. And he buys the new operating system, OS One. And you turn it on, and you boot it up, and it says, hi. And you say, hi. And then, and it's amazingly enough, sounds just like Scarlett Johansson, which I personally would like.
Well.
And she's very cute and breathy. And if he does things like, he says, why do you do that? She says, what? You take a breath in between. You don't need to breathe. You're a machine. She said, what do you... You're pissing me off. She says, that's how humans communicate.
That's right.
And he says, yeah, but you don't need to breathe. She said, what are you? You're hurting my feelings. And eventually she does, in fact, become more and more human. He falls deeply in love with her. And then it turns out he's not alone. His neighbors are falling in love. Everybody's falling in love with their OS One computer. There's a whole business, apparently, of surrogacy. We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fascinating. The issues it raises are fascinating. Yep. And the UI is great because you're just talking with it.
Right. Exactly.
Is that what you mean?
That's the human. That's what I mean. That's the human
earpiece. And he's
that's the user interface. But basically, imagine traveling. You were recently traveling in Turkey and elsewhere.
You're talking about the Babelfish now.
Yeah. So exactly. So imagine being in Turkey and just talking, just saying out loud, you know, computer or Scarlett Johansson, whatever the command is to wake it up and say, translate. From Turkish. And then you walk into the bakery and you say, you know, it tells you what to say. And then when the person talks, you hear the English in your ear. That's a fantastic user interface for translation. The thing that they got wrong in her is that, yeah, Scarlett Johansson is the default voice. But in the future, we'll be able to easily choose any voice, including Scarlett Johansson's, anyone's.
Didn't he get a choice at the beginning?
Did he?
Yeah, I think he did.
You get the, you know, someone.
Yeah, would you like a man, a woman, what, you know.
Ways.
He didn't get the choice?
Man or woman, but you'll be able to choose from any celebrity. In fact, Waze has a feature where you can choose Elvis as the person. And we were using it the other day, and it's like, coming up on the right, turn left. And it's
spoil her for anybody, believe me. That was not a spoiler in any way.
Yeah.
I pitched this movie to my wife a few times. Like, a dude falls in love with an operating system. She's
you've got to see it.
No.
And, you know, it's a beautiful movie. I mean, it's really a beautiful movie.
Yeah, I mean,
movie.
It looks beautifully shot. Yeah. And, yeah, I just got to watch it on my own. I just don't think it's going to happen jointly.
Did you like it, Lisa? No, Lisa didn't like it. But she was working on her iPad the whole time.
Yeah. life is part of the 66%.
You thought it was a little slow and boring.
Depressing.
And it is, you know what? Yeah. It is depressing. Yeah, she found it very depressing.
It's depressing because that sort of thing is definitely going to happen. There are going to be lots. In fact, it already happens to a certain extent.
I want to know where I sign up. Yeah, guys marry their pillows.
Their pillows and stuff like they carry them around on the subway. And you know.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, it's people are lonely people will have options, I guess.
I thought it was great. And I didn't spoil it because there's a lot more after that. In fact, it gets even really weird. And by the way, spoiler alert, Apple bought Beats. Okay, we're moving on now. Let's take a break. When we come back, our tips, our number. Before I do that, any other stories? There were a lot, and we didn't get to cover all of them. But I know Gina wants to get out of here. And
I've been combing through the True Crypt source here, which has been very depressing.
I think this is almost – I'm going to absolutely say it's a hack. There's just no way this would be how it ends for True Crypt. The fact that it's signed with a hash that works just means it was a deep hack.
The latest commit. I mean, the source code was changed. I mean, there's just a bunch of abort process in secure app.
Absolutely,
lines.
Do not download that.
Right.
That.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lone exe file. As we know, TrueCrypt works across many platforms, including, of course, Linux and Macintosh. So the fact that I think there's something bad happened here. It could be just could just be one of the, I don't know what the committer rules are for this project, but presumably there are a few trusted committers. If one of them went rogue.
That's usually the case, right? But there's a couple of trusted committers.
Yeah. What's weird is we're not hearing from anybody about this. And in fact, the guy who, he's a cryptographer at Johns Hopkins has been tweeting about it. He says he's immediately contacted the developers of TrueCrypt and has not heard back from them. So there's a mystery here. And we'll continue to cover that. Very strange. If you go to TrueCrypt.org.
Very strange. Really weird.
And here is a picture, by the way, now crossing the Twitter of Dre and Iovine riding the One Infinite Loop elevator with Tim Cook and Eddie Q. So there's some happy people and rap's first billionaire. Dre has a quarter of Beats, and so that means he's just got $750 million.
It's good work if you can get it.
Nice work if you can get it. Wow.
But is he a billionaire? Does he already have...
Yeah, he has several hundred million.
Okay.
Already.
Yeah, so that, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
It was Tyrese. It wasn't him who said that, but I think it's probably pretty close. And by the way, he doesn't get all $750 million right away because there's $400 million in unvested stock that he'll get after sitting in a few board meetings. I just can't imagine him as a full-time employee. At some point, he's going to say, hey, it's been fun, but I got to get back in the studio. Don't you think?
Yeah, that does seem
unless,
strange.
You know, he's going to be eating in the cafeteria and, you know, no.
I love this. The chat room says, notice Tim Cook covering his wrist.
Huh.
Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Criminology.
And where is Eddie Q's right hand? Dun-dun-dun-dun.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Malik just tweeted, Google has cars without drivers. Apple has Beats by Dre. I don't know what it means, but there you go. That's today's show in a headline. Oh, must be watching. And what does Dre have on his wrist? It's an ice watch, but it's not a iWatch, I guarantee you. Although Jimmy's got his sleeve pulled down on his left hand too. There's something going on there.
They would have taken their watches off.
Yeah.
They're not going to be photographed, especially Tim.
You're right.
There are already all kinds of things flying around, little tidbits around this announcement. One of them is that the official title of Iovine and Dre are, Iovine's title is going to be Jimmy, and Dr. Dre's title is going to be Dre.
Yeah. That sounds
so
right.
So that's their official titles.
Is that a joke or is that true?
No, I think I've seen it. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
What are they going to be? Director of engineering and director? No, I mean, what are they going to call them?
Yeah.
So.
All right. Our show today brought to you by our good buddies at Squarespace.com. We've known them since practically they came out of the college dorm room. Now they are the place to go to create your wonderful, beautiful new website, whether you're a blogger, a photographer, an artist, or whether you're selling, whether you're a poet, Squarespace is hosting the best hosting ever, plus the best software. They tie together. They're intimately connected. You always have the latest software. Never have to worry about security. They have an incredible set of 25 templates, each of which can be customized to make a unique site. In fact, click any template and then look at the various sites created with that template, and you'll see these are all real sites. You'll see what Squarespace can do. Just incredible. This is a fine art collection. Squarespace is beloved among artists, photographers, creatives, because it is so beautiful. You're getting, though, I got to tell you, state-of-the-art engineering, gorgeous code if you look underneath the JavaScript, the HTML, the CSS, and you don't need to know any of that. They handle that all for you. But you get state-of-the-art mobile responsive design. Every single Squarespace template is enabled for e-commerce. In fact, even at the $8 a month level, you can create a site that can sell or take donations. Squarespace just is knocking it out of the park. And, man, do they make it easy to get into the Squarespace space. All you have to do is visit squarespace.com, click that Get Started button. You're going to get 2 weeks of Squarespace. They've got importers, so you can get all your content from your existing site in there, including comments, pictures, all the links work, so you can really see what it's like. And then this is, again, very modern. You just pick a different template, and it all looks completely different. You don't have to re-enter anything. Everything just works. It's all works on no matter what size screen you're using. They have apps for iOS that are just gorgeous, Webby award-winning, in fact, including their blog app, which lets you post and moderate comments, their metric app, which lets you measure your traffic, even your social media follows. You got to try it. 2 weeks free, no credit card required. Start building your site right now at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up, by the way, $8 a month when you sign up for a year, and you get the domain name free, and we're going to cut 10% off when you use the offer code TWIG. Squarespace.com. What are you waiting for? I know you know about Squarespace. What are you waiting for? Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIG. Gina Trapani, time for your tip of the week.
Android now has touchless reminders. So when you activate voice and you say, okay, Google, you know, remind me to feed the dog at 4 p.m., you can now say, you know, Google kind of pops up a confirmation box that you can tap and say, yes, remind me. Well, now you can just say yes, and the reminder will be set. So fewer taps, you can control completely by voice. And this, I guess, was kind of a silent rollout, but is working for, should be working for most users now.
I just love, Google now gets better all the time.
All the time.
And I just got the new Google Plus app on Android.
That's amazing, isn't it? Isn't
yeah.
it beautiful?
It's beautiful. It took me a little while to get
really nice.
Used to it. I couldn't figure out how to use it. Like how to get to photos, but
yeah, how to get to photos. No, they relegated photos.
Change
the
things
bottom.
Around, and you know what? No more hamburger, and I think that the hamburger is now deprecated.
Yeah. Like, I think the hamburger is on its way out.
Yeah, I keep seeing designers say, "Oh no, don't ever use a hamburger." Nobody knows what it means. Nobody even knows what we mean when we say hamburger. Yeah, you taught me how to. It's or the basement.
The
it's those
lines.
The lines where you slide.
The three lines.
Yeah, Facebook uses it still on their app, but it's surely on its way out there too.
And man, those photo stories are amazing. I really love the one that you posted,
love
Leo.
Them.
Yeah, it came out really nice.
Thank you, Google.
Really nice.
I know. Google's going to take over the world, and we're going to be really sorry. But I, for one, am welcoming our new overlords.
Yeah.
I just love them.
Yep.
I just can't get enough Google.
And by the way, the performance of this app is really good, too.
The new Google Plus app?
For Android, the Google Plus app for Android. Much better than the old app.
It's gorgeous. And because of Google Now, I know that the Giants are five innings into a no-hitter with the Cubs. So there's that.
Nice.
Yeah. What do you want to share with us, Mike?
I have an app.
You got an app? All right.
I do have an app. Google, within the last hour, updated its Google Camera app and has a bunch of new features for Android, the Google Camera app for Android.
Okay.
It's available now in Google Play Store. It has a new fisheye lens mode,
ooh,
which is really cool.
Cool.
Yep. You can set a timer. Now, they used to have a timer function. I believe they took it out. Now, they put it back in so you can say, you know, in 30 seconds, take a picture
That's
or whatever.
Good.
It's actually a 3-second or a 10-second, not 30, delay so that you can get into the group shot or whatever. Again, that was used to exist. You can also capture landscape scenes with your left hand. So, and you can choose between 16:9 or 4:3 aspect ratios. There's a new creative panorama mode of wide angle and fisheye. So the fisheye mode actually simulates a fisheye lens. So this is a variant of like a photosphere where you essentially end up with a circle rather than a 360-degree thing that has to be viewed in a special mode. So it's really a kind of a nice update. If you're already using Google Camera, of course, it'll you'll be using it anyway. But if you're not using it, you might want to give this a try because it looks really cool. It's already a great little app, and it looks even better with a few unique features.
Very cool.
The thing I liked about the Google Camera app is that it was a lot simpler than the built-in Android camera. So I hope that all these new features they're adding doesn't turn into that like halo menu effect where you're like sliding up and down, you know, huge hierarchies of menus. But those sound like really cool new features. I'm excited.
Yeah. And I guess we'll get that soon. I mean, I don't think I have it yet.
Yeah. They announced it around 2:00.
Oh,
Pacific.
Okay. 44 minutes ago.
Yeah. Damn, I should have gotten the change log. I'm glad you got that, Mike.
You couldn't have gotten it. You just announced it. I got a couple of Kickstarter or actually crowdsourced projects to talk about. Everybody's been saying you got to talk about LeVar Burton's Kickstarter project to bring back Reading Rainbow. I did not grow up with Reading Rainbow. You did not grow up. Maybe Gina did. Chad definitely.
She didn't grow up.
Yeah. It's Chad's. It's Chad's generation.
I can go anywhere.
Oh dear. It was a PBS program that was very beloved. LeVar Burton taught a lot of kids to read. He said, you know what? Millions of kids in the United States are still illiterate. One out of every four children in America will grow up illiterate. That is just wrong. Reading Rainbow was 1983 to 2006. 26 Emmys, a Peabody Award, but PBS canceled it in 2006. He wants to bring it back. He did bring back the Reading Rainbow app. We talked about that. But he says it's not going to be TV anymore. So what he wants to do is Reading Rainbow in the classroom. He wants to raise $1 million to do that. And lo and behold, I mean, they just started this today, I think. It's already to $750,000 and going up fast. They'll reach their goal in minutes.
That's great.
Yeah, 16,000.
Good for him.
Yeah, and if we can help put that over, I would love to do that. You know, let's try to get LeVar. I'll call Brett because I bet we can get LeVar in triangulation.
Yeah, get him on.
And talk about that. We've talked to him before. He's just he's a great guy. The other one is something that Jeff Jarvis asked us to talk about. His friend Bill Gross, he's been on the show, has a new affordable 3D printer on Indiegogo, the Matter Mod T, a 3D printer that would go for just around $250.
That is an elegant piece of kit.
This thing looks amazing. This thing looks really, really cool.
Isn't that neat?
And it's not only that it's a 3D printer that's really affordable, but they want to make transmitting designs as easy as installing, you know, an app on your phone.
Wow.
Looks like an Apple product. You know,
it is beautiful.
So I can send you a really cool coat hanger, you know, just as easy as sending you an SMS, and you can just print it out right out there on your desk, and that's like, so you've got it. I mean, it's teleportation, you know, really kind of in a way. I love MakerBot I love 3D printing, but this one seems like it's really kind of even within range of a normal person. And if a lot of people have these, then sending designs and making designs, I think it'll just be a lot more prevalent. This is a really cool project.
It's a PLA printer. It would be able to print objects at 6x4x5 inches. Frog Design designed, and look at it, designed the printer itself. Beautiful plexi case and so forth. So I just wanted people to go or to know about it and to visit Indiegogo. They're trying to raise $375,000. They're more than halfway there, 35 days left. The campaign started today. So this is another one where people are just going crazy for it. Gosh, crowdsourcing is just
it's great.
Incredible. If you search Indiegogo for MOD-T, that's the name of it, the Mod T printer, that we'll now be able to teleport coat hangers, thanks to Gina Trapani. I'd like to send you a coat hanger, not wire, PLA. So there's a couple of interesting Kickstarter projects. Hey, folks, we're out of time, but I want to thank Mike Elgin for being here. Taking some time.
Thank you for having me on.
It was a good time for you to be here. We had some big breaking news, two big breaking news stories. You can catch Mike Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1700 UTC for Tech News Today, our daily news program. Mike's really done a great job kind of revitalizing it, redesigning it so that it is just really a great place to go, not only to know what the big stories are, but to understand the big stories.
That's right.
We've really focused on that, and you've done a
great
job.
We've been focusing heavily on getting some of the best journalists in the business to come in and tell us about their scoops and exclusives, and it's really great. Jason Howell and I are having a great time, and it's really exciting.
Good.
We're having fun.
Nice to have you, Mike. We really appreciate it. Thanks, of course, to Gina Trapani. We love you. ThinkUp.com if you want to sign up for the best Twitter analysis tool ever. I wish there were some way to get Google Plus into this.
Yeah, we're working on that. We're working on that. Instagram, Google Plus, Foursquare. Yep.
It's not easy though with Google Plus, is it?
They don't make it easy.
No.
There is a read API, so I guess you could read it, right?
Yeah. We can read it. We can get comments and stuff. That their API is not as fleshed out as Twitter's and Facebook's, but yeah, we're still working on it.
You can only get public shares, right? So that's less than half of it.
That's right.
Yeah. A lot of less than half is public.
That's what they've said in the past.
And, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago with when Kevin Marks was here. You know, he's big on the Indie Web project. And we talked about this new With Known, used to be IDNO, the publishing platform, the design of which is you publish to your blog, and then it publishes it out to Foursquare, Facebook, and Twitter. But, of course, it can't do it to Google Plus because there's no right API.
Right.
And Ben Ward Miller said he set me up, so I'm going to have I'm going to move my blog to that soon. But I wish we could do this with Google Plus too. Anyway, thinkup.com. These are the insights. Leo Laporte really inspired conversation. Replies outnumbered retweets.
Leo Laporte has a real potty mouth, using the F-bomb 25 times a day.
You still have... this is Facebook. This is fixed now. 2 weeks...
Oh, yeah. we got to fix that data there, Leo. Sorry about that one chart. Yeah, the three right points are correct. It's the ones on the left that aren't correct.
I suddenly had a great week. 14,000 friends a week I'm gaining.
We switched from tracking friends to tracking followers, so that's the. I apologize. That is a bug, which we'll fix.
I don't care. I have a lot of followers, not so very many friends.
We're still in beta, and we're making lots of improvements, and we're launching new insights every week. And we're going to have a free trial soon, so if you're not quite sure if it's right for you soon, in the next few weeks, we'll have a free trial, so we'll be able to try it out without committing right away.
Uh-oh. I got the famous "but enough about me" insight. 67% of my tweets last week had "I, me, mine, or myself."
Up 52 points. Oh, wow.
Normally I don't talk about myself, but I just felt like I had to this week. It's all about me.
You had to share. It's all about you, Leo, and that's a good thing. Own
it. I don't know.
No judgment. No judgment.
I don't think about that. I only tweeted 7 times last week. It's not a fair stat.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Okay, you wanted it. I'm going to do it. I was wrong about Beats. Okay, you happy now? You happy now? We played the video. why did we record that? Because I knew there was a pretty good chance I would be wrong about Beats. But I wanted to be wrong about it.
That's it would have been glorious if you'd been right, because everybody said it was going to happen. So,
hey, thanks, everybody. We appreciate your time. We know you're... Podcast hours are limited. We're glad you chose to listen to this one. We do Twig every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC on twit.tv. I love it when you watch live. And you'll see some big stories sometimes. Something big will happen. But, of course, on-demand audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/twig, on Stitcher, on iTunes, wherever there are better podcasts. And, of course, the best way to do it was to get one of those great Twit apps on the iPhone, on the Android, on Windows Phone, on Roku, everywhere. So download the app. We didn't develop them, but we appreciate the developers who did. And start listening to Twig every week. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.